Hello and welcome to another episode of A Cornucopia of Tales and Tellers. Tonight we are in Ireland, we are in Italy, and we are in Palestine. So, Hen, thank you very much for joining us today to talk about storytelling. You're very welcome on the podcast.
Thank you for having me.
And Simona is here as well. So, Hen, can you tell
us
all about your background in storytelling and how you got into storytelling?
Yeah, of course, my pleasure. My name is Hend, and I'm joining in from Gaza, Palestine. I work as a teacher of English and a storyteller, currently volunteering as a storyteller for the Hands Up Project, working with young learners of English in Palestine and also in different parts of the world, engaging them in the English learning process through storytelling, drama as well, and many other cultural activities. I also do tandem storytelling whether at the Hands Up Project page or at different platforms with the brilliant and professional storyteller Rebecca Lemaire. So she's my storytelling partner, I would say. I remember the first time I got into storytelling was at an event hosted by the brilliant storyteller David Heathfield at IOTFL. I remember that the title was Get Together, sharing stories and from around the world during the pandemic.
Nice one. Thanks
well,
I usually like to
tell my stories bilingually, like insert also Arabic language into English storytelling. And I like to accompany my storytelling with music because I play the lute. I feel that it gives it another dimension to the storytelling, to my storytelling.
Would that come with all the stories you tell, or is it a select number, or do you find that it actually fits everything you play?
I mostly tell my stories with music and also with a bit of Arabic, like some phrases, if possible. But yeah, I try to stick to this, to kind of a theme for me.
Okay, cool. Very nice. So with storytelling yourself then, how do you use it in your classes and how do you use it outside of class? So would it be mainly online or is it face-to-face as well?
Yeah, I use storytelling in my teaching. The way I use storytelling actually is to solve problems or to tackle problems that students face when studying or when learning the curriculum. So I tend to turn curriculum-based topics into stories so as students can find it, can find the topic much easier. So, for example, I work on the reading skill because students are, panic when it comes to reading. They hate reading comprehension, all this stuff. So what I do is I turn the reading text into a story and I accompany the story with music. And so students find it much easier and joyful.
Do you think it helps a wider range of students then, from like a wider range of sort of learner types?
Well, I think English, they have the same skills, like whether you mean because I use it at curriculum-based thing or...
Yeah, because there's music involved. It's not just reading off a page. There's music, there's sound, there's audio, there's... Mm-hmm. I mean, I'm sure there would be action with it as well from time to time.
Yeah, students find it really interesting. They love it and... They don't only love it, they also learn and they benefit from this way of teaching.
Nice. So now that we're all teachers here, what was your first contact with storytelling then?
In the storytelling world, the first one introduced me into the storytelling world, you mean?
Yeah.
Well, I remember I was first nominated by... Nick Belbro, the founder of the Hands Up Project, He contacted me during the pandemic, and I got to know David Heathfield through Nick Belvrow, and that was the start. I told the story at IATFL, the event hosted by David Heathfield. Yeah.
Nice. Do you feel under pressure at
A bit under pressure because, yeah, it was the first time for me to.
that?
I remember telling a story. Yeah, I actually took part in a storytelling competition about 5 years ago. It was held by Sharik Center, based in London, a center for teaching Arabic to non-Arabic speakers, and I shared a story. I entered the competition with an Arabic story, a Palestinian story. I told it in Arabic, and actually I won the second place at the Arab world level.
Nice.
Yeah, and that was quite,
Wow.
yeah, now I remember but that was Arabic storytelling. That's why, yeah, I can't, when you tell stories in English, for me it's much harder, of course, because it's not my mother tongue. But yeah, IATFL, the event hosted by David Heathfield, was the first time, I would say, for me to tell English stories.
What about your first contact with storytelling in general, like in your life? Do you come from a storytelling family, or
My
did your
mother,
grandparents tell you stories?
my mother is actually a writer. She writes really beautiful thoughts, and she likes to tell stories of her background and about, her family, her own family. And she uses this kind of really touching style when she speaks about an event or an experience that she went through in her life. So I would say, yeah, I'm taking a bit from my mother, the way she tells things in general. Yeah. And I'm myself, I'm as a student, I used to turn topics into stories, so as to be easier for me to memorize. As a student in school, I was a bit crazy, a crazy student. Yeah, telling the story out loud, and yeah, and
You saying there was a
yeah,
way of memorizing things there?
yeah. And this is what I do with my students nowadays.
Okay, so what's the
So,
technique?
well, when I turn a topic into a story, I get my students to memorize the story, or at least to talk about the topic after learning the story, so they start, talking about the topic fluently, more fluently, than without a story,
Well, I remember at the Beyond the Crest that we took, the three of us took together, when you told the story of the water cycle, the story you had invented
Exactly, yeah.
to explain the water cycle. And I still remember that story. So it works. It really works.
And you want to see my students talking about the steps of the water cycle, and they talk about the water cycle really fluently, even though they're only in the sixth grade, and their level of English is really low, I would say, but they can still talk about scientific topics.
Yeah.
I think I stole that idea as well, because I think, did you put it on YouTube afterwards or something? I know I remember the water cycle one as well. Yeah, I remember stealing that
Yeah,
idea for a group
maybe,
of 10-year-olds I
from the
had.
course. Yeah, from the
Yeah,
course.
I
I'm really glad to be sharing with you another story, because I remember us enjoying sharing stories at the Beyond the Crest course with David Heathfield.
That was
Yeah.
almost 2 years ago now, was it? Something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was in December and January in 2021.
Yes.
So December 2020, January 2021. Gosh.
Hello. Almost a year, yeah.
Yeah, hello. The pandemic still owes us another 2 years back, I think, from the universe. But yeah, that's a different thing. Yeah. So was the rest of your family like storytellers, or was it mainly your mother?
Well, my mother, well, I wouldn't say she's a storyteller, no, but the way she speaks, the way she talks about normal things, about experiences that she herself and her family went through. She loves to talk about others' experiences as well. She's fond with, people's stories, places, stories of places, stories of historical things. Yeah, she's would call her a storyteller, but not like she doesn't share stories like us, like online or face to face or nothing. Just thing, yeah. For the technique itself, the way she speaks with emotions, with I think it's a thing in Palestine where grandmothers tell stories to their granddaughters. Yeah.
Nice. And is that the sort of the passing of the sort of passing of the cultural heritage that way then? Because I mean, I would probably have the same thing from my grandfather.
Yeah.
Quite similar, and it was
Folk tales, it did seem to skip.
Yeah, it skipped a generation really. And it did seem to be a grandparent thing. Is it the same in Italy?
Well, I have a really different experience from you, but just because I have four really different grandparents. One of them used to tell us about riddles and short stories, what we call filastrocche in Italian. It's rhymes. It's generally rhymes. So she used to tell us about rhymes and riddles. The other one used to talk about historical facts, but you had to be really, really careful with him. Because if you asked him something like, "Oh, Grandpa, why do you have this object?" he would start saying, "Oh, you know, in 1938, the war started." And so he would go with all of the historical facts, and then the actual story would be something like 2 minutes about the reason why he had something like that. And the other two, they speak Milanese dialect, and they tell a lot of riddles and jokes and stories from their lives, but none of them ever told me folk tales stories really like that. Yeah, so it's a different experience.
I think that even in Palestine, grandmothers used storytelling as a way of parenting. Like, in Palestine, I read something in a book that grandmothers used to tell stories to, or the mothers and the grandmothers used to tell stories to their sons, children in general. So when because men in the past used to go out. For example, they took the boys and they go out like to meet other men in circles, you know, to chat and everything. And the women and the women and girls would stay at home, and that was the time when the mothers told stories to the daughters. Yeah.
Nice. But,
and daughters and even boys who were under 16, because a boy, when a boy reached 16, for example, they would just go out with their fathers, like he was already grown up and he was already a man, and it's time to go out. But women and girls would stay at home. They were not allowed to go out in the evening.
So well, it's something really similar to what... actually happened historically in Europe, but I guess also in other places as well. Do you know the lavatory? So where you washed your things. Is it the right word, Alan? The lavatory, where you went with your clothes to wash them? Yes. So the place where you went to
laundry
the
room.
river.
Laundry room. Yeah, like laundromat.
Well, not the laundry room. Historically, there weren't laundry rooms. There were rivers or these places with pools where you would wash your clothes. And there the women would gather and then share stories. So it's more or less the same thing.
Nice.
To pass the time, of course, while they were washing.
So, Hen, tell us a bit about your work with a hands-up project then.
Yeah, as I mentioned before, I'm a volunteering storyteller for the Hands Up Project. I usually conduct weekly storytelling sessions at the Hands Up Project page so that young learners of English can watch and engage in the story and so learn English joyfully. Yeah, there are many other activities, of course, implemented there at the Hands Up Project in general, related to storytelling, drama, and cultural exchange.
How did you discover the Hands Up Project? How did you get in touch with the Hands Up Project?
I remember taking part in the playwright competitions that the Hands Up starts every year. And in schools, we get they circulate a note for something that the Hands Up Project is implementing a playwright competition. I took part in two playwright competitions. I got my students to play, not two, three plays, play and act three plays. And I remember Toothbrush was one of the plays my students wrote. And it won the most creative play of.
And you've been doing storytelling festivals of recent.
Yeah, I took part in storytelling festivals, very few of them. The Scottish festival, about 2 years ago, and I remember taking part in the Royal Albert Memorial Museum event hosted by David Heathfield, 88 Tales Around the World, and of course the IATFO, the first thing to tell English story there. And the Chennai, I told tandem stories. I did tandem storytelling with Rebecca at Chennai festival. Yeah, and we still do at different platforms, yeah. Me and Rebecca.
Nice. And I think that leads us on because I know you're holding it there. Can you tell us about the musical instrument you have right in front of you?
Yeah. Because it's my friend. I call it a friend of mine, a good friend of mine. That's why I always carry it. You see me only with oud, so hand is like oud, yeah. But I started playing. Well, it was a crazy idea at first because I first wanted to play a musical instrument, my family were like, "Oh, really?" Because I started playing at the age of 25, maybe. Yeah, so it was recently that I started, playing, and it was a crazy idea for most people who knew me, but I insisted on playing a musical instrument, and oud was my favorite. And I started playing, learning by watching tutorials on YouTube. So I spent 6 months learning all by myself, and then I started playing, and like I started to produce really good melodies. They were terrible at the time, but I was very happy. I was really delighted by them. But then I decided to go to a musical center, conservatory. And I remember my music teacher told me that I was already playing and that I didn't need much work. And all I needed was to practice. So now I now I'm really happy that that I took the risk, you know, to buy a musical instrument and to waste, not waste, but spend time on learning. Yeah, now I don't regret it at all. Now I feel, yeah, the achievement.
For those who might be listening to this who don't know what the oud is, could you explain what it is?
It's a Middle Eastern musical instrument with strings, with 5 to 6 strings. And yeah, I use a stick to poke, to pluck the strings. Yeah, I'm not, maybe you can describe it better, Alan.
I am the least capable of describing a musical instrument. But funnily enough, I love the idea so much that you took like the oud being the Middle Eastern instrument to go with storytelling. So this year I actually thought, well, why don't I do an instrument with storytelling? Because I think that would be kind of cool if I could try it. So it actually arrives tomorrow. So I can't show you it tonight, unfortunately, but I did get myself a harp because, well, what is the most Irish instrument on the planet? Well, the harp. So it's a small one. It's not a big monster one, but it's a small one that I can try to learn and try to tell stories. Really, yeah, that is actually quite big. Yeah.
Well, yeah. My oud is big, but other ouds are not as big.
Okay, cool. Nice.
Well, and Alan and I recently discovered that we had the same idea. Like, we both took inspiration from you to put storytelling together with music. And he's just bought a harp, and I've got a djembe. So it's not an Italian instrument, but I've got a djembe, and I'm trying to do the same thing. And you're our inspiration.
I can say that.
Yeah, my Bowron tin whistle and flute wouldn't quite match for storytelling, but I think a harp might, a small harp, just to pluck a... It's a 12-string one, it's a small one. But who knows, there could be a disaster.
12
we'll see.
Strings,
no. Yeah.
Oh, super
I'm
small.
Struggling with 5 strings only. I wonder how you would manage.
I have no strings at all on my instrument.
It's, the 12-string is the sort of smallest one you can get that still sort of plays music on it, whereas like the big ones can, I think they can go up to like 31 strings or something. There's terrifying numbers you can get. I'll never be that advanced ever. That'll be a couple of lifetimes, but we'll see. So the one thing me and Simona are really, really, really excited for is Hend. Do you have a story for us?
Yes, of course. Imagine telling you, no, I don't have any story.
I would genuinely laugh if we got someone on one night and they went, wait, what? I'm supposed to tell a story?
Yeah. Now, this is a prank. I don't have any stories. It's just, it was an excuse to see you.
So what story will you be regaling with us tonight?
I'm going to tell you the story of an idiom, an Arabic idiom. That I would say it was originated in Egypt, because we say the idiom in the Egyptian dialect. So the idiom is we dahna dafninu sawa. This is the Egyptian idiom dahna dafninu sawa, which literally translates to we buried it together. We buried it together. So we would say this idiom. I know you don't use it in English. Not sure if you use it in Italian, but we would say this idiom when we know someone is lying in a situation, and like we both know it's a lie. Like, hey, we buried it together. Stop lying. So maybe you have it in Italian. I feel that we share lots of things in common, Simona. maybe you have something.
I need to think about it. I'll let you know.
So I'm going to tell the story with songs and music in between, and the story of this idiom.
Fantastic.
Great.
وعيوني هيا طيري وتقولي فنجان فنجاني تند القهوة ممتلية وعيونها يا طيري وتقولي فنجان فنجاني تند القهوة ممتلية يا عيونك سود وحلوة يا عيونك سود وحلوة يا عيونك يا عيونك يا عيونك. So it was said that long, long ago, two brothers once had a donkey that they named Abu Sabr. Abu Sabr in Arabic means the father of patience. The two brothers relied on that donkey, Abu Sabr, for almost everything in their life. They rode that donkey in the desert for long and long distances under the burning sun, carrying goods from one place to another, visiting a relative who lived far, far away. They really exploited that donkey. They loved that donkey, actually. They loved it so much that they decided to consider him as a third brother to them. One day, and during one of the longest journeys in the desert, it happened that Abu Sabr, the donkey, died. Now we can all imagine the grief the two brothers fell into over the loss of their beloved donkey. They didn't know what to do without him. They were so sorry that they decided to bury the donkey in an honorable way as a tribute to all what he'd done to them. So there in the desert, in a spot in the desert, they built a royal-like tomb. They buried the donkey there and they stayed there beside the tomb, weeping hard. And if anyone passed by and saw the two brothers crying over that tomb, they would ask about the deceased. "We're very sorry for your loss," said the people. "Who's the deceased?" they asked. The two brothers replied, "The deceased was Abu Sabr, the most patient, the most generous, the kindest ever. He fulfilled the needs. He brought closer those who were far away. He fixed all problems. Nobody was as perfect as Abu Sabr was." And of course, as the two brothers were describing a donkey, people thought they were talking about a devout or righteous deceased. And so, as a way to console them, people started bringing food, drinks, clothes, whatever comforts the two brothers needed to survive in the desert. Some people paid money to the two brothers so as to be allowed to get closer to that tomb and maybe get a blessing from that devout deceased. As the time passed, it's like a shrine for those people who sought blessings from a devout deceased to fix their own problems. And of course, the two brothers became in charge of that shrine, exploiting people's naivety and collecting as much money as they could. They grew wealthier and wealthier as the time passed. One day, the two brothers fought over money, and one said to the other, "Give me my money now, or else I will go to Abu Sabr and tell him all about your bad deeds." "Tell who?" the other brother replied. "Abu Sabr? My brother, we buried it together, remember?" ويكفو فيها يا طيري تحمل فيها الغير يا ديمة على الموارس ما تليها ويكفو فيها يا طيري تحمل فيها الغير يا ديمة على الموارس ما تليها يا عيونك سود وحلوة يا عيونك سود وحلوة يا عيونك يا عيونك يا عيوني.
That's the end of the story.
Oh, that was so good. Oh, that was delightful. You really weren't joking. Like, there is a really powerful sound out of that. The oud as well. It's really, really, I don't know. It feels like it's much more than one instrument.
Oh, yeah.
It's really, really nice. Oh, that was a delightful story. I loved that.
Thank you.
That was really nice. Yes. You said before you told the story, is that an Egyptian Arabic idiom? Is that right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. But would you use it in Palestine?
We would, yeah.
Yeah.
That's why was sure it was Egyptian, because we wouldn't say it in the Palestinian dialect. It's only in the Egyptian dialect. And this is the interesting part about this story. It's not only about, you know, telling the origin of something, because I like stories that tells the origin of something, but also it spotlights a popular phenomena in Egypt where people would prefer to go to shrines of devout deceased to fix their problems than fixing the problem themselves, you know. They relied on, I would say it was quite popular in the past. Lots of people did that. Maybe it's much less nowadays, but yeah, it was a thing in the past.
Okay, so. Cool. Well, that was a delightful story. I really liked that. That was really nice. I love the mix of singing and music as well. I love that.
Great, thank you. I'm glad you liked it. And I enjoyed telling the story to you and to the people listening.
And how did this story come to you, Hend?
Well, I watched a video telling the story of this idiom in Arabic, and I translated the story into English because I loved the story. I was like, yeah, it's amazing. Like, yeah.
And then does the music, is that you putting that to your story, to your translation of the story then?
Yeah. Well, yeah, I mean, the song that I sang at the beginning and at the end has nothing to do with the story or with the theme of the story, but it's just that, yeah, I recently decided, okay, this, I like this story and this song, and I will sing it with this story.
Fantastic. Yeah. It feels like it is a very rich instrument. It feels like it's more than one instrument at the same time. I just think it's a very deep instrument. It's really nice.
Different scales. Yeah, mm-hmm. Because I play different scales. It's not only one. So it is. Yeah, you're right. This would be different.
Mm-hmm. There's a real deep sound to it. It's really nice.
Yeah, there is the sad scale and then the joyful scale, and then so you'd feel it's a different instrument. Yeah,
that's fantastic. Thank you very much for that story. I really enjoyed that.
Thank you.
Yeah, really liked that.
I really enjoyed telling the story.
Thank you very much, Hen, for being with us. Thank you, Alan, for your wonderful questions. And thank you to everybody that listened to the episode. And we hope you enjoyed it. We'll be here. Just see you next time. Bye.
Gonna have to write you a script.
Bye.